You're listening to episode 151 of the Furlough Bros Tech Podcast. Yo, hashtag Furlough Bros.
Welcome to episode 151 of the Furlough Bros Tech Podcast. Today is the day before August the 18th, 2014. I'm Matthew Dean Furlough, and this is my birthday celebrating brother, James Furlough.
Yes! In one day, it will be 2 months before my birthday. Pretty exciting.
Oh, man. That is very exciting. You're getting an early start on the celebration, obviously.
Yep. I thought I would start by celebrating your birthday.
I appreciate that.
What's on your birthday list, man? How old are you turning?
A, freaking out, because that's what's on the list. Because this is what the deal, James.
Freaking out is on the list.
Today, I am in my mid to late 20s. Tomorrow, I will be in my late 20s. I'm going from 27 to 28. And that's weirding me out a little bit, I'm going to be totally honest.
Yeah, 28 was tough. 29 was also tough, I'll admit. 30's not so bad. It's kind of because you've come to terms with, like, oh, I'm not young anymore.
Yeah. This weekend was kind of a rough ride for it because it's my in my fraternity I had a little brother, as most fraternity men do, and I was very close with him, and he got married yesterday. So I was at that wedding, and we were meeting all sorts of people, hanging out with friends, and, you know, meeting single girls and that sort of thing, and just people guessing my age and sort of their expectations of how old I was. Yeah, it's a little bit stressful.
Are they high or low on average?
A little bit of both, actually. Like, sometimes it'd be like, wow, you are way older than I thought you are. You are really old. And then sometimes they'd be like, which is a certain, like, that's a reaction you don't want. But the other reaction that was even worse was, wow, I thought you were really old, like a lot older than that. You strike me as really old. I don't want to be that either. Can I just be like mid to late 20s for another 2 days?
Yeah.
So I don't know. It's the beard. It throws people.
Yeah. It's a dual thing. Like at work, I'm one of the youngest still, actually, but I'm no longer the youngest, which was kind of for about 4 years, I was the youngest around, you know?
Yeah.
And now I'm like, okay, I'm not the youngest anymore, but that's cool. That and this team that I joined was actually like, it was the team that I originally joined with HP, and then I moved over to LegitLand, and now I'm back to it. The team's kind of, it's morphed and it's very different. So as a result, most people on this team have been there for like a year, year and a half. And so I'm walking in like, oh yeah, 6 years ago, I remember when we did that. And like, they're using code that I originally wrote, and I'm like, oh my gosh, I'm getting old. But all that to say, like, as a general rule, at work, I feel pretty young, right? People are like, oh my gosh, you're only 30. You know, cool. You got your whole life ahead of you.
Right.
And then, you know, I help out with the high school group, and they're like, so how's it feel to be ancient?
Yeah.
It's like, I'm not that old, guys. But I don't even fit in. You know what I mean? I mean, it's clearly I'm older, too. I'm not just like
some young grad
hanging out.
It's especially with high school kids, because they're literally sitting there going, so what's it like to live twice as long as I've lived?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I don't remember, to be frank.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know. I'm yeah.
28. That's tough.
28.
Sorry.
Turned 28. That's
all
right.
I feel for you.
Know,
I remember that.
You know, it's funny. I was talking to one of our cousins, and I was saying, part of my problem is this, is that it's a twofold fear moving forward, I realize. There's two things that I kind of it's the one hand of, you know, you place expectations on yourself of what will I be doing when I'm 30? Where will I be? You know, the whole, like, okay, I expect to be in some sort of a long-term relationship. I figure, you know, I'll probably be moving on to the next phase of my career around that period of time. I'd like to have accomplished this. I'd like to have done this, you know. There's that part of it, and you're like, oh, my gosh, I only have 2 years. What if I don't make it? There's a certain stress to that. But then there's the other side of it that it's like, I like my life where it is. I like the direction I'm going. Everything's going well. And what if everybody, all my friends start to freak out in the next 2 years and it just all comes undone? Like, I'm starting to get to the point where I've hit a certain level, but I like have to, you know, work to maintain that level and to move forward. And I'm just sort of like, it doesn't have that its own momentum. So I'm starting to, yeah, I'm freaking out on both sides of it. So it's, you know what? And the worst part about it is it's just like, just supposed to just relax, man. You know, as the great Van Wilder once said, you know, if you're not careful, you might not survive. You might not get out of life alive.
Like, nice. You know,
that's close to what the quote was. This is a terrible version. You know what? I'm going to quit there. I'm just going to jump right into the show. This week, we're not going to talk about Van Wilder and misquotes of him. This week, like every week, we're going to be talking about technology and the continuing corporate opera. And by that, of course, we mean the soap opera of corporations' dealings back and forth, the people working for them, their marketing campaigns, and, of course, the technology they're developing. But before we get into the heart of the show, James has got a short disclosure he wants to toss at us.
Yes, I work for HP, which is apparently full of old people. However, I do not represent HP or any of HP's opinions. I do remember one last story. I do remember this lady, she was retiring. And she was taking, like, the early retirement option, too, right? And she was like, oh, cool, you know, when did you start and stuff? And she was like, yeah, you know, I started working for HP in 1983. And I went, well, that's a good year.
That is a good year.
I like that year. That was the year I was born. And she, oh, man, she almost backhanded me right there on the spot. Yeah, I said it out loud. That's right.
That's awesome. Speaking of things you almost said out loud, when you said, apparently, HP is full of old people. My first thought was like, I couldn't have told that by their commercials and products. And we're talking about the semi-monthly Matthew bashes the company James works for. So
it's okay, dios are dead.
That's
just calling it. Has a certain ring to it.
Foundational technology. Yeah, that's a good point. They are dead. That's why by 30 I want to be moving on to the next phase of my career. Actually, you know what
is
dead?
To the internet where everything's digital. It's good.
Right? Yeah,
we don't
exactly.
need hardware on the internet.
Well, see, what the real dilemma is that, and this is the simple truth, is that human manufactured diodes is dead. I mean, that is a dying technology, and that's exactly what we do. I mean, we are desperately trying to move in the direction of not having humans do it, but at this point, they still do it, and all of our machines are built around that, and they're not being designed in such a way that they'll easily integrate with the fully automated fabs of the future that will inevitably replace what we do.
That's a fascinating problem. We should talk more about that 1 week.
Well, yeah, we should. Not this week, because, well, it's a big topic.
Yeah.
But we've got other cool stuff going on. What am I supposed to say next? Oh, yeah. If you want to follow me throughout the week, I had so much to tweet and Facebook about this week, but I also have T-Mobile, and I was up in the mountains, which means I had no internet connection. Actually, nobody had internet connection up there in T-Mobile's defense, but I lost it about 20 minutes before everybody else did and got it back about an hour after everyone else did. So there's that. But otherwise, it's a great service. If you want to follow me throughout the week when I do have internet connection, though, you can go to @MatthewDFurlow. That's my Twitter. Or you can do NextWiggin4. That's my Instagram.
I am @JamesFurlow on Twitter, JamesFurlow.com. Elsewheres, I was semi-active this week.
Nice. Yeah, and also don't forget to go to furloughbros.com. Pretty cool website there. All sorts of fun stuff. We talk about a lot of stuff throughout the course of the show, reference articles, all sorts of stuff.
Yep.
If you're ever thinking, man, that sounded like garbage or that's really interesting and I want to share that, go to the website. Check it out. All the articles, all of our footnotes, as they were, are there. Our bibliography of the show. And, yeah, check it out. Also other cool stuff. And served up directly to your client-side PC. Check it out. It's awesome.
One of the things I do is go to Google and you can search, do site:furloughbros.com/, and then whatever that topic was, hit enter and it will search just our site and it'll surface up that podcast that had the topic in it.
So
it works really well. I do it all the time.
That's cool. So it's site:, you don't have to tab or anything, you just go furloughbros.com in space.
And pick a topic? Maybe FAA.
I was going to go with Tesla.
That works too.
Oh, top Tesla Furlough Bros podcast. Check that out. So, interesting side note, the Google Doodle, I have a feeling that I'm the only one with it, but my Google Doodle is a bunch of birthday cakes.
Really?
Yeah.
Let's see here. Google.com.
Oh, you know what?
Mine's and when just plain. Nothing at all.
And when, guess what it links to when I hit the Google Doodle? My Google Plus page. They are. They're celebrating my birthday.
That's cool.
Thanks, Google. That's actually kind of cool. That is neat. Anyways, what are we going to talk about, James? I think you're up first.
All right. Transition. I want to start off with this new app that that sounds interesting. I think the app itself is not going to go anywhere, but I like where it's headed. So there's your backhanded compliment there. Their name is Spiral, which I'm always a fan of apps or companies or organizations or whatever that can think of cool names. You know, I am not that person. I'm very good at like leveraging other ideas, but for people who can just like come up with a name and be like, oh, I think this is representative of it, that's like, kudos. That's a skill I don't have, and I wish that I did.
Yeah.
So, yeah. Spiral is one of those that, I mean, on one hand, you're like, okay, it's a location-based name, and so you're like, Spiral, I get it. But again, I would not have come up with that name, you know, not obvious. Anyways, they help people connect. Essentially, it's a local social network. That is what it is. It will, whoever posts a Spiral near you, and you can determine how, you know, how big your radius is, you will see all updates of people near you. So then if you then moved or traveled to a different city or sometimes even a different part of town, you will see a completely different stream. Because it would be, you know, in theory, it depends on how popular they get, all that stuff.
Yeah.
And so the idea being that you can feel immersed in your local area that you're at. They have a cool... The founders are a good set of guys who've done some engineering stuff for like Microsoft, Apple, and Google, and they've studied at Stanford and Harvard, which is probably the big reason why they're getting A, funding, and then B, news coverage. But, you know, because they're kind of like, you know, it's hard to not get a bunch of smart people in a room and go, oh, okay, this could be cool. So the way they describe themselves is a Reddit-styled community for local chatter, with proximity as the guiding principle. And because I guess they're like the genesis of the idea started at Coachella, and there are a bunch of people who are trying to do meetups and trying to figure out like how to make it all work, and they're like, oh, we need something local for this. You know what's neat is you can insert pictures and text, text and video as well, so people can see it. Think Snapchat for local stuff, kind of, except it's permanent, you know, as long as you're there, I guess, is the way to say it. There's also in a lot of ways, they're stepping on the toes of a lot of different apps, you know, like Yak and Secret and Whisper, even to kind of a point is like Facebook and, like I said, Snapchat, a little bit of Foursquare because of the location piece there. But it's a and so my thought around this is I don't think you'd sign up just because, you know, it requires a certain critical mass there to make it worth it instead of being the only one chatting. And especially living where I live, I'm fairly certain I would be like one of two people who are using it. And neither one of us really have that interesting of things to say, because let's be honest, there's no Coachella in where I live. I'm like, so went to the Friday night movie at the park, it was amazing, out of this world, and then like a picture of E.T. because I did go see that movie in the park.
I get it. Out of this world. I see where you're going.
You're welcome.
I'm tracking.
That's good. So I think the app itself, not a great idea. You know, it's not going to go anywhere. It would be interesting to see if they get bought by someone. I could totally see that happen. Just because it's a good team. They're playing in a space that attracts some monies. I guess my question would be, like, which company do you think would bite the bullet and be like, oh yeah, we're totally all over this one?
It depends on what they're getting bought for. So this is my thought on the whole local social network type apps. I think there's a lot of people that really believe that there's a great idea there. You talk to people that sort of like, you talk to people with cool app ideas, everybody's like, describe what they do is they pick some app and then they go, it's like this app, but for people close to you. Because there's definitely this feeling that you get lost in the noise of how big everything is. And it's like, even the apps like Tinder, which is designed around the idea of you basically, it takes your location and then it gives you a radius around you, you know, which so it's designed to give you the opportunity to meet people close to you. But usually in order to kind of increase your odds, you go 40 miles, 50 miles, 100 miles, 7,000 miles, whatever it takes to get, you know, get girls
like you. Can
you go
that big?
You can't go that big. You can do like 100 miles, I think it is. Okay. Which is just still, you know, it's still big.
It's a lot of people at 100 miles, depending on where you live.
A tremendous number of people. And then I stumbled upon this app and it got a little bit of attention and I thought it was a really, really good idea. It was called Mingleton. And I was like, and basically what it is it actually, it goes so far as to say it uses iBeacons, which iBeacons pretty much are limited to the same bar as you. So what you do is you'd walk into the bar, you'd open up the app and, or, you know, because it's running on iBeacons, it's running in the background. And anybody else with the app on would be broadcasting their iBeacon things. And if you all cross paths, it'd alert you. Say, hey, this person's in there. You'd rate each other. And if the person rates you as positive and you rate you as positive, you start to connect. And
dude,
can,
but
like,
they're like, they're in the room with you. That's weird.
Pretty much. It is kind of weird. But I thought it was a good idea because one of my big problems and one of the things I hate about Tinder and your these types of apps is that it all starts with texting. And I like texting as much as the next dude, which is to say not much. And I, you know, it's one of those things where I don't want to text them. I don't want to know everything about you over text. I want to like really engage with you because it's so much, so little of our communication is just the words we're saying. It's all the other parts of it. That's what I want to get to know. And so I want that. I want to decrease the difficulty to actually getting face-to-face time with the person. That's what I'm all about. And so I'm sitting here with this like with this app thinking this is a great idea, and then I actually used it for a while and realized nobody's going to use this because nobody else is on it. And because nobody else is on it, basically what happens is you have to get such a giant critical mass where to get two or three matches a night, basically every single person you know has to be using it.
Oh, yeah.
Whereas with Tinder, only two or three single people have to be using it, but the radius is big enough where you don't even have to be in a very popular area to get a decent number of hits on a regular basis. Not to mention the fact that Tinder was smart enough to throw in ghosts into the whole mix to make it feel like there was more people than there actually was. And
I don't know what that means, but...
Well, so basically just the fake profiles.
On purpose?
You know, there is a huge bot problem on Tinder. Some people call it a bot problem, but it's something that's never fixed and never addressed. So I would call that a bot advantage. And basically what it is it makes it seem like a very popular app. There's always more girls for you to vote on or guys for you to vote on, as the case may be. Now, those people never like you back and you never have a conversation with them.
Weird.
But it makes you feel like, oh, there's a lot of people on this site. Oh, Whereas with Mingleton, because you've got like they're supposed to be in the room with you, they can't fake it, you know?
Yeah.
And so there's this dilemma there, right? And apps like this where it's all about location based stuff. Now, if their whole thing is it's basically like, you know, stories and tweets are saved to a general location. So as you move in and out of that location, that's a good idea. I could see that being cool, where it's kind of like the front page of that area. But I think the broader point to answer your question of who would buy it, well, it depends entirely on if it gets any popularity or not. if it's an incredibly strong back end to a complicated, you know, engineering task. So if it's basically they've got the back end set up, it works really well, it's very robust, and they've proved their engineered bona fides, a company like Google might buy them to absorb their technology. If they get 100 million followers in the next 2 weeks, a company like Facebook is going to buy them. I think it entirely depends on how much popularity they're able to achieve, and how short of a period of time will determine whether or not they get bought. And I think the reality of it is but at the same time, they can't pull a Snapchat and actually get enough popularity to think that they've got legs to stand on and try to, you know, stay the course. I think the implication that inevitably they will be bought is that they will not get the popularity required, but they're a smart enough team, they've got some money together, they'll be able to build up the back end and prove themselves as a technological, you know, competitor. And so you'll see one of the bigger companies do basically an Apia hire. You know, we think you're a good team, we think you're capable, and we want to turn you, we want to fold you into the Google Plus team or into the, you know, HP Facebook page.
I can see it as a good Google Plus match.
Yeah, except Google doesn't care about Google Plus anymore, so.
That's true.
Unless it's your birthday.
They built that last year.
Yeah, right. Yeah, when Google Plus still mattered. It's so weird how Google Plus is just sort of, it's on its way out. Like, I don't know what it's going to look like in 2 years, but it's not going to look anything like it does. I think there's still value to Google in the idea of your profile, quote unquote, on Google.
Yeah.
You know, sort of a central login and central credential.
Profile is not what you're looking for. Your searchable demographics.
Yeah.
That's the valuable part.
But the whole idea of like of it being a social network where you're supposed to post pictures and post your thoughts and stuff is going away. I mean, it's gonna morph dramatically, and I think in short order, I bet within two Google IOs it'll be Google Plus won't exist in the way that we thought it does and it does today in any proportion. All that information will still be there, and they'll break out photos into its own separate thing, and they'll break out this and do its own separate thing, and they're already moving photos away from Google Plus because photos is a strong product and Google Plus isn't. I could see this team getting bought by a company like Google pretty easy. But so I got a question, James. What does it take for you to lose internet at your place?
Snow? I'd have to lose power. If I lose power, I lose internet.
Right. If your router goes down, do you lose your internet?
I suppose. Generally. Yeah.
Yeah.
Never really goes down, but okay.
Yeah. Well, that's because routers are pretty robust. And I'm glad you bring that point up, because this is the deal, James. Routers are supposed to be these really, like, they're rather simple. They're basically, they've got little computer chips on them, but they're pretty simple in what they do. They take IP address requests, and they funnel data back and forth to the wider internet, and they basically take an address from one side and the packaged information inside of it, and they don't look at the information or anything. They just take this entire package and they send it on to the next address with all that information bundled in. And so it keeps track of a few addresses. It keeps track of one node out in the open internet, and it keeps track of your computer's address. And it just passes information in and out, in and out. It doesn't do anything all day. But if something were to go wrong, this is the single node that you have to your entire network inside of your house. So if something goes wrong with your router, like you unplug it or something, the internet goes down. Well, it turns out that's not just the case with your house. This is a hate case with an entire country.
Huh.
So back in 2012, a couple years ago, Syria was a country. And at some point during that year, it stopped being that. the whole Arab Spring thing was going on, and we were right in the thick of revolts and revolutions and civil wars and dictators getting taken down, and Syria was doing their thing, and they were tearing themselves apart at the seams, and all of a sudden, internet in Syria went completely blacked out. And everybody started running with the story that the Syrian government has either accidentally or purposefully, you know, taking down the internet. The thought was that it was supposed to be, you know, blocking out the rebels' ability to communicate and ability to get information out. And it was thought of as the strong arm move by the government to kind of to decimate their population's ability to revolt. And, you know, it was this big, look how terrible the Syrian government is. And turns out that's not exactly what happened. So as I was saying earlier with your router, it's kind of a cool little device. It takes all your information, all your data back and forth. It sees every website that you go to. It sees every text that you send. It sees everything that you do.
Yep.
And it never looks at it. Well, the NSA decided, hey, you know what would be really cool is if we could put some spyware onto these routers all over the world.
Brilliant.
And then we could see this information. Yeah. And so the NSA, this entire thing is going on, and the NSA, or more accurately, the U.S. federal government decided, hey, we need to know more what's going on in Syria. We need to be able to know what the bad guys are doing. We need to know what the good guys are doing. We need to know who the bad guys are. We need to know who the good guys are. They're still asking that question to this day. That's besides the point. So the NSA said, hey, we got an opportunity here. We can go and we will infect the central router for all of Syria, where the vast majority of all data goes back and forth, and we'll have it send us a copy of everything.
Brilliant.
Yeah, it'll slow down your internet a little bit, but you get to, you know, scrub everything. You get to see what everybody's talking about and see where all the emails are going back and forth. And sometime during that whole process, they accidentally bricked the router. They added some code that prevented it from working properly.
Oops.
And yeah, and took down the central router for the entire country and yeah, blacked it out. That's just crazy. I don't even know what to say about that. I mean, because there's a part of me that's like, you know, if you do, you know, disagreeing about spying aside and spying on other countries, you got this country in the middle of a region where you've got active wars going on. They've gone into full-on, you know, civil war, and you're trying to figure out which side you want to support. You know, if you're ever going to spy, that's the time to spy. But I think it really points to, you know, I don't know. I for all the garbage that the NSA, I think you can lump on them for being awful and morally wrong. I don't know if this is – I personally don't think this is one of the morally horrendous things that they've done. But technically inept. And, you know,
sounds like what they were trying to do is complicated.
Yeah.
Just make this machine do what it's not designed to do.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree, but I think, you know, jeez.
Oh yeah, by the way, let's do it remotely, so one can tell.
Yeah. Yeah, that's the real trick. That's where I think.
Though it would be kind of nice to know if there were like secret agents in there inserting code via USB stick, debugging on the fly, James Bond style.
Yeah, man, they're like. They're typing on the keyboard and they're going, I can't do it fast enough. It's going too fast. And then the other person goes, let me help. And so they jump onto the keyboard like it's onto the same keyboard, like it's a piano, and they're playing together. Four hands going at once so they can type faster.
Makes sense.
And beat the computer viruses.
What movie was that?
Yeah. Let's say NCIS.
Got it.
Yeah. And
that was way too specific to be general.
Yeah. And if you've ever seen the show, you know exactly what we're talking about. What was I going to say? Yeah, it's just crazy. And I wish I could have been in that room when they realized, like, oh. What? We're not getting anything out of the router anymore. It's not responding. So what does that mean? Like, did we lose connection or something?
It's hard to say at this stage.
Yeah.
You know, I hope they took a play out of the oatmeal and were like, and it's down. Let's go outside and play for a bit. Right? We have to come back up.
Right? Man, okay. Yeah, yeah. See, maybe they'll turn it off and on again, and that'll work. Yeah. Oh, my goodness. Oh, geez. That must have been like... Could you imagine being like one of these, like, you've got this super high stress, like... You're trying to spy on an entire country's network. I mean, you are the smartest, best, most capable hacker engineers in the world. You've got all the technical specifications on this router. I mean, like, and you're doing it in the middle of, you're attacking a router in the middle of a war zone. Like, this is incredibly important. And he accidentally broke it. I've accidentally fried microprocessors before at work when it's like, you've got four microprocessors that you need to program in order to get the entire system up and running. And you accidentally burned the last one out because you didn't unplug the power. And just that feeling of like, you know, sinking feeling of like, oh my gosh, we're out of these. We're going to have to get another one. This is going to take 3 days to get another one. How are we going to do this? It's just like a horrible feeling of, I just bricked one of these things. Like, I can't even imagine it on. I don't know. It's crazy.
I hope it generally was crazy, you know? Just, like, people running around going nuts and, like, screaming and yelling and, yeah, just genuinely crazy.
Yeah.
I just like to imagine that.
I feel like I need to put start a calendar of today 50 years from now. Somehow, like, do that. So that you can just, like, in 50 years you'll get an alert where it, like, tells you the story that you need to go back and look up, like, the things that are finally becoming public record. You know, NSA accidentally bricked Syrian router during the middle of a civil war. And then read the reports about it. It's like, eventually all this stuff will come true, and you just won't even... I mean, like, 50 years from now, geez, I'll be twice as old as I am now. Oh, my goodness.
You'll be more than twice.
You know what? So I saw the movie Boyhood over the week, which I've literally told everybody is one of the greatest movies I've seen this decade. I said, do you know what that one is?
No.
It's a movie about childhood and parenting, but it's a single cast and it was filmed over the course of 12 years. So this kid, the main character is a kid who starts at the age of 6 when the movie starts, and at the end of the movie he's 18 years old, and you watch him age over the course of the movie. But Ethan Hawke is one of the main characters in it too. So he starts at like mid-30s and goes to like 40s, 50s by the end of the movie. And it's an incredibly well-told story, and there's just great little snippets of pop culture over the last 12 years that they tie into it and stuff. It's a great movie. But I was talking to somebody and I was like, yeah, man, 12 years, I mean, it makes you feel really old. Like, just watching this whole thing, like, wow, so much has happened in the last 12 years. I was like, I mean, just thinking about it, in 12 years, I'm going to be... Oh my God, I'm going to be 40. that was not good. That was not a good feeling right there. I hope I'm alive. But yeah, so I'm back to the thread of the conversation. Yeah, I feel like I gotta do something.
What? I think I lost you. Say that one more time. Hello. Oh, boy.
These stories, because they're just so fascinating.
Wait, hey, hold up.
What actually happened behind closed doors?
You there?
I can hear you. I can hear you.
Now I can hear you.
Okay. Cool. I could hear you the whole time.
Oh, that's nice.
It was nice. I like the sound of your voice. Yeah, no, it's just crazy. I just want to know what it was one day. I hope I remember to look back.
Gotcha. Fair enough. You know, speaking of having something ping you and notify you to look back, you know, there might be a service for that.
Yeah.
Goes by the name of Yo.
All right.
Perhaps you've heard of it.
50 years from today, I'm going to get a Yo.
Yeah.
What is this for? Why did I 50 years ago today, the day before my 28th birthday, did I say Yo?
Yo. Wow.
I almost want to do that to myself now, just to really...
So
I feel like this is important.
It may be more useful than you think.
Okay.
Because they have made some updates.
Ooh, is it more than just insane yo now?
It is, actually. You could do a couple things. So they got like 1.5 million dollars in seed funding. Good for them. To make it better. And so what you can do now is you can do a couple things. The first one is you can send a yo link, which is what would be useful to you. Essentially, you can attach a URL to your yo. So let's say you have a URL. It's sitting in your clipboard on your phone. You go to send a yo, and all you do is you long press that person's name, and it sends them a yo along with the link. So when they tap on that notification, boom, opens up the link to whatever it is that you wanted to send them. Now, I hear that and go, we need to learn how to hack accounts, because that is just, that's trouble waiting to happen.
Right.
I don't think I would ever click on a notification from somebody if it had a link in it. That just seems absurd to me. Why would you? I mean, that's like, please give me some malware, please.
Yeah. The only nice part is it's an iPhone, so I feel like...
True.
Or I have an iPhone, so I feel like it'd be very difficult for you to get it through the, you know, but if I had an Android, I don't think I'd ever click on a link.
Okay, fair enough. So they think that, like, news websites can do that. They can send you a yo with a link to the breaking news. So...
Okay.
Another one that I was like, okay, this one's genuinely cool, is that when your friend posts a photo to Instagram, you can use something called InstaYo, which is a third-party thing, I guess, that can send not only the yo to notify you about it, but also the link to the photo, which will open it up in a single tap.
Okay. This is so stupid.
Does it sound like if this and that yet?
It sounds like if this then that. It sounds like just a third party poor version of Notification Center. Like all of these things are just notifications or text messages.
Dude,
like
it's a yo.
Yeah. You know what, it's
single
funny.
Single tap. Super convenient.
If their whole deal was they used a really dumb gimmick in order to get mass adoption of a really kind of simple universal notification center, that it was probably the most genius like marketing move I've ever seen. That's not true, but it was a pretty smart marketing move. If they think this is a useful innovation, oh my gosh.
So it gets better. They've made more improvements. So now there are hashtags.
Oh yeah, hashtags.
Yes. So, I don't know how to make them, but essentially, you can create a hashtag and send somebody that hashtag. So it's like maybe I think it'll go like yo, then hashtag whatever it is, and so you can make one, and then other people can use them. And if they get used a lot, they'll show up on the newly created Yo Index. Booyah! So you can see what the most popular hashtags are at this time, based on how often they've been used.
Okay, I gotta go to the Yo Index.
Let's
Yo
see.
Yo grows up.
What is number one? I hope it would be appropriate to be YOLO. let's see here. I don't know what Yo Index. How does this work?
Yahoo Live.
Yahoo Live, is that a hashtag or is that must be an account, right?
Yeah, I guess.
These are popular things. I just want to see this trending on Yo.
It's that simple. There's nothing simple about this, Yo. Yo, this isn't simple.
So trending. Okay, number one, used 150 times, is hashtag now this.
Oh, wait. Oh, jeez.
Yo itself is 75. Rev. Is that for revenue? Revision?
Revision, I think.
Okay. Jethro 2.0. I don't know. It's weird. Is it time for a beer yet? .com?
That's the thing we gotta do. You only need to get 150 hashtags to be the top of the charts, James.
That's it. We could do that. What is the Yo Index? These must be popular Yoers, huh?
Yeah. Yeah.
Yahoo Live.
Dude.
Maybe these are popular.
Dude, I hate to be this way, but this is actually a good idea.
What?
Wait, where are you looking up the hashtags? The Yo hashtags.
Oh, go to the hashtag section. It says trending on Yo. There's a link there.
Do you have an account?
Justyo.co/trending. No. Do you?
Justyo.co.
Justyo.co.
.co.
/trending.
/trending.
Huh? Coming in at 4, dude. By the way, is in last place is Antifish.
James, if we could get our entire family to just Yo hashtag furlough bros, we would be on this list.
It's true.
If we could get 151 people to hashtag furlough bros, we would be the top of this list. Okay, if anybody's listening, please do me a favor. I'm getting Yo right now. Come on. What the heck? It's stupid, but if I can ride stupidity to the top, I'm going to ride. You know what I'm saying?
I gotcha.
I'm doing this right now. I'm not even joking.
Podcast. Hey, what's the name of the app? Pause.
Yeah, this is important. Yo, I love the fact that... Here we go.
Yo, it's that simple. That's our tagline, by the way. While he's doing that, other things that you can do is you can actually have a profile, because that's what you gotta have. Apparently earlier you couldn't, it was just your username, and now you can actually add a picture and your real name, and then they can see some more information about you, so we actually know who it is who sent the yo. So that's Yo. Pretty straightforward.
Yo, it's that simple. This is the dumbest app.
But oh, I like that, you know, the people are still very, some people, not everybody, are very bullish on it. Like, oh no, it started out as a gimmick, really dumb, just like so many other apps, right? Twitter, tell me about where you are, and look how awesome that became. And so they believe that Yo is a similar deal where we just don't get it yet, but it's truly brilliant, and eventually it will morph and evolve to something that is useful, and that's why they were like, here it is, it's coming.
This is so stupid.
I love the internet.
I know. Oh my gosh.
Can you send me a Yo, or do I have to be on it in order to receive a Yo? Like, how does it go viral? That's what I want to know.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Enter your phone number to find your friends and allow... Enter your phone number? Or... Okay. I almost read my phone number out loud onto the internet.
You could do that.
That would have been a great idea.
It's fine.
I would have gotten a lot more Yos, that's for sure.
Hey, as long as they're hashtagging with furlough bros, what do you care?
That's a good point. Let's see here. There's no organization to these names. I can't believe I'm finally doing this.
I think that's awesome. Do you actually have people you know that are on it?
No.
Oh.
Of course not. I'm having to. It says tap to invite literally everybody on my.
Oh, are you doing it?
On my list. I'm trying to find you. Okay, I'm gonna. Okay, Chris, you're on my. I can't. Oh my goodness, this is so stupid.
Dude, I'm gonna send you Yos all the time if you invite me. That's how we will start every single podcast. It'll be contextually relevant. You'll just know. because of the time and who it was from. You'd be like, oh, a podcast.
Yeah, see, this is so dumb. So it's got like it's got the list of names,
uh-huh.
But there's not any like order to it, like alphabetically.
Really?
It's yeah. Huh. I can't figure out who the heck like Troy Tisthammer. Sorry, Troy, I'm using your name on live. Is right before John Stagnaro, who's right before Katie Madden. Like, oh, James Furlow, I found you. Which James Furlow is this? I don't know. I'm sending it to one of them. I just sent it.
Just got something.
That's awesome, dude. That's so funny. The app icon doesn't even have Yo on it. It's just a purple icon.
Really?
It's just a single color. This is the dumbest app.
It's gotta just be. It started out as a joke, right?
And yeah, that's what I'm saying.
It snowballed on this guy, and he's like, "Oh no!" He's gotta be loving it. $1.5 million.
Part of the reason why I make fun of it is because I'm jealous.
That's true.
Okay. Anyways, so. Let's talk about something different.
Okay.
So, speaking of useful apps, so you use Square, right?
Yeah.
You got the Square card reader.
Yeah. I got version 1.0.
Oh man, that's big money right there, man. That's how you know you're important to the company. Well, this week, they've obviously. Square was the first really in this market. When they went to Apple and said, hey, this is what we're trying to build, Apple liked it so much, specifically Mr. Jobs liked it so much that he actually had them sit down with Johnny Ives say, hey, this is how you need to make it look beautiful. And he was a big influence in the original design of the Square card reader. And they had a lot of success, but they're not the only ones that want to have success here. So another company, similar, called PayPal, might know of them, decided to get in on that market.
Okay.
They founded Tesla, I believe, is what they did. Sometimes they send things to space. It's crazy to think that Elon Musk was part of the team that built PayPal. So PayPal, now owned by eBay, does, you know, transactions online. Seemed right up their ballpark. They built a really ugly card reader that's all square and stuff. Or not square. It's the opposite of, yeah, it's all triangular and stuff. Oh, geez. That was dumb. That was a stupid faux pas. Yeah, so they built this, and they're having a certain amount of success. I feel like most people feel relatively comfortable with using it, but their big success is when they like go to big vendors. I think from a grassroots, just sort of mass adoption. You know, most people that are a single vendor, whether they're a service or they're working like, you know, they're doing whatever, they kind of go to Square. Square's a pretty good. People are comfortable with Square, what it is. I think PayPal. There's just been enough, you know, worries with PayPal over the years that there's a hesitation for mass adoption. Well, Amazon decided that, you know, they're going to throw their weight in behind, and they are coming out with a Square competitor, a mobile sales device. It's similar in principle. It's a little card reader. You plug it in, and it works. But they're trying to sweeten the deal and do the Amazon thing of undercutting their competition financially and making it hard to go with your competitors when they're so friggin' cheap. One of the ways of doing that is Amazon has launched a Square and PayPal competitor called Local Register, which provides users with a free app and a $10 card reader and charges our merchants and anyone selling services to use it just 1.75% per swipe on both credit and debit transactions.
So wow, that's cheap.
Yeah. So because right now... Square is at 2.75% per swipe, 3.5% plus 15 cents for manual entry, and they're really trying to undercut them. They said when the price goes up after August, whatever I told you, October 31st, after that price goes up, it's only going to go up to 2.5%, so it still will be permanently cheaper than Square's current rate. The 1.75 will stay for like, I think it's 2 years, they said, or maybe it's just a year. No, January 1st, 2016, at which point it will return to the standard 2.5% per transaction Amazon is charging. to really sweeten the deal, though, not only did, so it cost it, oh yo, yo back. Not only does it does the $10 you know, so it costs $10 to get this card reader, but when you buy one, Amazon gives you a $10 credit card for or gift card for, guess what, Amazon.com. Which is basically means it's good for anything. So they're trying to make it like a real sweet deal. It's basically it's free to get the card reader, and you get a 1.75% transaction, which if you're doing a lot of transactions, that is a compelling price point. Yeah. So it's kind of the deal. And they talk about the design of their card reader. Their card reader has like a little lip on it because they're trying to explain how annoying the swivel nature of the square card reader is and how horrible it is and how it makes life impossible to live because it swivels around on you when you use it. How theirs is a superior innovation over. Yeah, it's like, I think we're stretching a little bit here, Amazon. Let's stick to the price point. That's really what you got going on. Overall, Amazon looks to be pushing business owners to do all their sales both online and off via its platform, and make it and to make this happen, it's willing to undercut the competition. The new Amazon readers will also be available in Staples locations in the U.S., which should help in it somewhat in matching Square's general retail availability. Yeah, so there's that. So obviously we talked about you use Square 1.0, mm-hmm. Early adopter. What do you think about this?
You know, Amazon's got a lot of good things going for it. Transaction cost is huge, right? I mean, that was that's a big deal. Especially if you're doing a lot of transactions, those percentages start to add up pretty darn quick. Amazon's known, you know, which is entrusted, I would say. And so that's it's got that going for it, which is nice. The lip doesn't matter.
Yeah.
You know, Amazon's never been really known for making something elegant, I guess, and they're sticking by that. You know, you look at the app and you're like, it's all right, you know.
It's yeah. Fine.
It's not Square, that's for sure. Square's is beautiful. Do I think it'll be successful? Man, that's a good question. They're a little late to the game, a little bit. I mean, not to say the game's over by any stretch of the imagination, but there's definitely a, you know, Square has it, I guess. Is the forefront of minds for people who are doing it.
I don't think it's going to be easy for them to win outright. You know, really undercutting them for a month and a half or for 3 months is not enough to. It might get some big businesses to switch over, you know, where there's a real ROI over the course of 2 years to, you know, if we sign up all of our vendors in 20 different locations, we're using PayPal. I think they're going to do way more damage to PayPal than to Square.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I can't remember, does Square still just send you one for free or do they charge now?
I don't know. Probably
charge. I know, that was mine. I was like, free? Sure, I'll sign up.
Yeah, yeah, no problem.
I don't know if I'll ever use it, but I'll sign up. And so that was what I did. Yeah, I don't know. I'm trying to think, like, how does this make sense for Amazon, I guess? You know, when you think about, like, what are the natural extensions, you know, for them it was like, okay, we're selling books online, now we're selling everything online. You're like, okay, natural extension. You start out with the Kindles, and you're like, that's for reading. Again, related to books, makes sense. Then you go to the Kindle Fire, you go, okay, tablet. Just like the other ones, you can still read, you can see a bunch of other stuff on it. Makes sense. The phone, not well executed, but at least makes sense, right? Smaller tablet plus phone calls, you can do all that other stuff. I mean, does it does it fit with like the, it's a phone accessory? I don't know. I mean, clearly Amazon has to have a huge financial arm and financial processing capabilities to do what they're doing. I mean, so it's kind of like they've got this back end system, and so maybe that's just their way of saying, hey, you know what, we've got this thing, let's tap into it. You know, and
it can't hurt, and the longer they wait, the worse the situation becomes, falling behind.
The thing, though, that you got to remember, and I think you even linked to it, and I know I did later on, like, in Square did this, you know, top 10 myths about Square post, which, very defensive post, kind of interesting.
About it. I love TechCrunch's title for the article. Which is mostly the reason why I linked it, which was, Square wants you to know that everything's perfectly fine, or perfectly all right now. We're fine. We're all fine here now. Thanks. Thank you. How are you?
Nice.
which is one of the greatest lines of the entire six series. It is probably the single greatest quote. We're all fine now. We're fine. Thank you. How are you? Oh my god. Oh jeez. Han Solo is the reason why those movies were good. That's period, point blank.
True.
I will defend that argument vehemently.
One of their myths is that Square is just a card reader. They're like, actually, they offer a completely integrated set of tools to help you run your business from top to bottom. We're a rare service in that we connect payments to the rest of your business. You can send digital receipts, manage your inventory, track sales trends, embed online ordering into your website, and even schedule appointments, all from your Square dashboard. Learn more about their complete register and full suite of products at this link. And they've got easy-to-use tools. They've got a stand, a register, a marketplace, appointments, feedback, analytics. You can get funds for your business and do invoicing stuff. So all that to say, you know, they're trying very hard to not just be a swipe dongle thing and move beyond that. And I mean, some of their like Square Wallet, it didn't work, which is a shame because I thought that was genuinely cool. The cash register is pretty darn neat. I don't know. It's one of those where I don't think it's a Amazon entered a space, you're done type of situation.
Yeah, no. Well, I think there's a really good chance that starting November 10th, this is going to look like a really, really funny conversation. If Apple pushes out some sort of you know, you use your thumbprint in order to register your credit card information over local Bluetooth, and, oh, by the way, all iBeacon-connected devices, which is all your iPhones, suddenly can do, you know, payments, and it's all secured credit card, fingerprinted, you know, locally and everything. All of a sudden, the whole Square card reader thing is going to seem really goofy. You know, and which is, I think, part of the reason why they're so, you know, that is the reason why Square is so defensive about we're not just a card reader, because they see that coming. Their belief is that, you know, card readers go away eventually and probably soon. And Amazon, I think they're setting themselves up as a, you know, like you said, they've already got the whole back end because that's basically what Amazon is nowadays, really and truly, is it's a website where you do all this, you know, it's a checkout card where they connect sellers to buyers and they take a small, you know, piece off of the whole thing. And sometimes they manually do the back end of the actual storage and shipping and everything. But their view of themselves is as a web portal that displays objects that somebody is selling and then other people buy. And that's effectively what they're doing, is they're taking that infrastructure and bringing it to the real world with this card reader. And I think the reason why it's an important positioning tool for them is because when the next phase of your different Google wallets and Apple wallets takes off, you know, they want to be there. They want to be at the point where they can, you know, use their suite of tools, their infrastructure to continue to leverage that sales stuff, you know, and the idea that Apple's not going to want to be the register, they're going to want to be the computer that the register program runs on. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, and it could be less than a month before that this all changes. Which might have to do with the reason why Amazon said 3 months. You know, these companies they spend a tremendous amount of money trying to figure out what everybody else is going to do, especially their chief competitors like Apple. You know, there might be, it's entirely possible that there's no bigger coincidence behind that other than they can't let this deal go on indefinitely. But it also could just be, we know that we'll be able to make it go this long just because of where other companies are going, and we'll see what happens after.
Yeah, they can always extend it later. It's hard to say, oh, just kidding, we need to stop it now.
Yeah, it turns out that was a stupid idea.
Yeah.
That looks way worse than, hey, that was a great idea. You know, it's the $6 burger at Carl's Jr. You know, they introduced it for a couple of months because if nobody wanted it, well, then it just goes away. It was a limited time offer. But, you know, when it turns out that everybody wanted that many calories in a single meal, well, then we'll just make it a permanent fixture. We'll expand it. Now there's six $6 burgers, and they cost $7 each, which is just not nonsensical at this point. But
at least McDonald's was smart enough to change it from dollar menu to, like,
the value menu.
Or what was it, like the dollar plus menu or something like that?
Yeah, the dollar plus menu was crazy. I remember when I went to, it was the McDonald's, the McDaniels in, was it Corvallis? And we walked in, and it was the dollar menu with items on the menu for $1.25. And I was like, what? And you explained, like, yeah, this is like one of the McDonald's where they try these, like, wacky, hey, what can we change here?
Yeah.
Like, they do crazy stuff. It's just like, it's the test run, one of their test run McDonald's. That is so weird. Also really frustrating because I have $2.
Oh, yeah. All right. So Samsung's gearing up for September 9th.
Yeah, right? Jeez Louise, guys. I mean, it's just so...
It's not copying if you do it before them.
Well, see, the problem is, James, they're not copying the future iPhone. They're copying the current iPhone. Samsung sales, obviously, over the last year have not been to their preference. And part of the problem is that Lenovo and Xiaomi have both been whipping up on them. Oh, yeah, that's right. It's the Szechuan. It's oh, geez. We talked about this last week. How do you say it? How do you pronounce? This is important. We're going to get this eventually.
Yeah.
20, yeah, you're right. 20 unpronounceable tech brands. That's the one I clicked on. Anyways, these guys, they've been making some pretty good headway into China, and okay, here it is. Think of Xiaomi, pronounce the first word as if it were shower. Show what? The mystery ends here. According to the
Xiaomi?
Xiaomi, that's right. Xiao. Technically, the first syllable is more of a Xiao than a show, but the difference is fairly subtle to most American Indians. So it's Xiaomi, that's right. Like Szechuan. But we spell Szechuan with an S. So, because we're Americans. So Xiaomi, their whole thing is right now, basically they make iPhones. They look just like iPhones, and then they sell them these Android phones in China. I mean, they're complete knockoffs. And they're pretty unashamed of the fact that that's what they're doing. And they're making some pretty good progress doing that. Samsung, they had quite a bit of success in these markets by being shameless knockoffs of Apple. But they were getting a lot of trade dress problems. They were getting sued a lot. And I think they just, the pride of wanting to believe that they were this, you know, strong designers kind of got the better of them. They believed that they could build beautiful Android phones that kind of stood on their own merits. And didn't just succeed because, oh, they look just like the iPhone. And turns out they can't, unfortunately. or at least I think the reality of it is that these other companies are getting a lot of success by, you know, as they say, the iPhone is the aspirational brand, especially in China. And they're very expensive. Only the very, very elite financially can afford them, generally. And these kind of cheaper Android phones that look very, very similar are making a lot of progress inroads. And so Samsung...
It does generally look cool.
Oh, yeah. It looks way better. And so Samsung has unashamedly decided to, you know, step their game up. And they added a metal band to the edge of the Galaxy phone. And it looks a whole lot like an iPhone 5 now. I mean, just...
Yep.
Just, you know, and it's so funny because, I mean, at this point, it's just like, it's just, you would say that this is like a shameless knockoff, and you would try to attack them for it, but it's like, what are they supposed to do? They're losing the battle to a company that's doing a better job of copying Apple. Like, you know what you do at that point? You copy Apple better than the other guys. and I think as far as Apple's concerned, Samsung's a much more reasonable company and does take pride in their own designs. And more importantly than any of that, they really want to be the masters of their own destiny. They don't want to be, completely subservient to Google. They don't want to be, I think if Samsung had their own way, they wouldn't be partners with Google. They'd have their own, strong ecosystem of operating systems and software and hardware. They'd be more like Apple and not a, you know, an indirect competitor, but they'd have their own, you know, world, which is easier for Apple to deal with than a Chinese company that's not, you know, that's not even trying to sell in America because they don't want to have to deal with the lawsuits, who's making huge progress into this giant market by creating iPhone lookalikes. It's craziness.
Still looks cool.
That's so you're going with the it was a good move, just
from a but it's gonna work.
Yeah, that's true.
I don't know about the color blue. That's not working for me.
Yeah.
I'm more of a white, though.
Apple wouldn't have done blue.
That's true. That's true.
Yeah, I don't know.
Well, we'll see. It'll be a whole new game with a whole new device and all the superlatives to go with it in September.
It'll be amazing. Earth-changing.
Yeah.
The course of humanity will pivot.
You know what would really help, though, is if we just had more girls involved and helped out with the design process.
I know, right? Wow, that was sexist. Why can't they help out with the technical side? Are they not good at the technical stuff, James? The hardware engineering? They're only good with fashion? Jeez Louise. You know, it's been really weird. So,
I didn't say they wouldn't. I was just highlighting one area that... thought they could also contribute to.
Okay. No, so one of the things that I wanted to, I'm sure you kind of get a sense of this because you read a lot of the same articles that I read, but obviously, like, one of the big things that has been kind of going on in the tech media space has been these, the Silicon Valley diversity reports. A bunch of companies have been coming out with these, what they call diversity reports, where they basically take the demographics of their company and they break them down and they say, this is what our company looks like demographically. And you know, some companies just really release the report. Some companies say we're proud of what we've done. Some companies say we're disgusted with what we've done. Some companies say it doesn't matter. Some companies say it does matter. And there's all these big debates. I think one of the interesting ones was, Pinterest is like 85% dudes, and their demographic of users is like 85% women. And there's people that are just asking, like, does that make it difficult for this company to serve their customers, that there's such a you're basically upside down in your demographic representation. And you know, Pinterest is basically defending themselves, saying, well, we've succeeded in serving females, so does that mean we're having a hard time serving females? I would say, I guess not. But at the same time, it's like, you know, whatever. And then, you know, Apple came out with their diversity report, and they actually were the best of all the different companies, and Tim Cook came out and was like, but we're still really disappointed with it, and we can do better, and we need to do better. One of the interesting parts of the diversity reports I've thought was just an interesting undertone is that what we're finding is most of these companies are comprised of white males. But how they define white males is obviously anybody with, you know, a Y chromosome. That one's pretty easy to come up with. They probably are self-identifying as males, which means some of them might not have a Y chromosome. That's a small minority, though. But the more interesting part is that they're actually defining white people as not just Caucasians, but non-Indian Asians. So Japanese, Chinese, Korean, which I think is an interesting, like, you know, I'm not a demographer, but I've usually thought of, you know, as white people as Caucasians. maybe that's just me. So a lot of these statistics are skewed by that fact that they're not even including non-Indian Asians in as a separate demographic. But that's all besides the point, because the simple fact of the matter is there's a bunch of dudes in these companies. How you split up the different races and countries people come from is one thing. How you split up the sex, it's crazy. It's absurdly biased. And what I think is really interesting about it, and the reason why I want to bring this up, is because my experience in the last couple of months slash year has been, it's actually something that people talk about in the Valley. It's not just you know, I think sometimes I get the sense that it's just the media elite that care about this sort of thing, and it's a fun topic to talk about, or it's a loud minority that's making a bunch of noise I think the racial issues within these companies, it is more of a loud minority. Whether it's a problem or not is, you know, we can debate all day long if we want to. But I think the people that are actually making noise tends to be a small group of people, whereas the whole female versus male debate in these companies is something of a bigger, broader. People are asking questions about it. How do you change it? Why do you need to change it? Is it important to change? And I think the biggest thing that's come out of it is that that it's not so much these companies don't want to hire females. There might be some of that involved. There, you know, this sort of, you know, continued pressure to, you know, hire somebody who's like you. So if you're a white male, you hire a white male is always the argument. That's the perpetuation of institutionalized racism is what that tends to be called. In this case, it'd be institutionalized sexism. But I think what's really interesting and just sort of the undertone of all of this is that the big problem isn't necessarily that white men want to hire white men. It's that white men who want to hire females can't find any females to do the job. There's just not that many. There's way more jobs that need to be filled. There is a sufficient number of programmers to fill those jobs. There's just not a sufficient number of female programmers, female engineers, female computer science scientists to fill that job at a perfect ratio. And so one of the big arguments about that is that it starts young. This is a problem that there's just girls don't take programming classes. They don't take in middle school. They don't take them in high school. And so they don't take them in college. And how can you change this problem? You know, if this is a legitimate problem and it's causing a lack of vision and a lack of opportunity and underserving your customers in the real world, how do you fix it? And the argument that everybody's making is that you got to fix it earlier. So this brings us to the current Engadget article, which is schools are trying to find ways to get more women into computer science courses. And what's cool about this is Carnegie Mellon is one of the big schools, and it's Harvey Mudd is the other one. But they're trying to, University of Washington is the other one, and they're trying to get, how do you move the ticker? How do you get more girls into the traditionally all boy courses? And as a boy that had to take classes with all boys, I would have really appreciated more chicks in my class. I'm fully in favor of this sort of a move. So basically what they did is, and this was, I thought this was really interesting. Basically, like, when the freshmen come in, they like just have these courses where they're basically like, hey, so this is really cool stuff that you can do with programming. This is how it might be applicable to things that you're interested in. You should check it out. And just by trying to address the actual interests and needs of females and how computer science would be applicable to it, they're getting huge number of girls going to computer science. That's it. And they're talking about how, like, yeah, we didn't change any of our course requirements. We didn't even change our, like, what our courses talk about. We basically just did a better job of telling girls, hey, you can do this and you should do this. And which is really cool, because I think, you know, it's interesting, like, when you look at the history of all these different, you know, the history of female involvement. It's like back in the day, 1600s, notoriously, all acting was done by males. And nowadays it tends to be mostly female that get into acting and stuff. And, you know, what causes these changes societally? I don't know. It's interesting. And especially because it's like, you know, I'm not a big fan of when we change requirements in order to move demographic needles. And the fact that they're not and they're succeeding, I was like, that's, I don't know. It just seems, that's cool. It's interesting. It's really interesting. And I, you know, I plan on following it more. I think it's interesting. Do you think it's interesting? You're rather silent on this topic.
Yeah. I liked what you were talking about at the end there, you know, and I liked how you drew that analogy about the thespian career.
Yes.
And I do think that's interesting, and we probably should see a shift. I mean, I know you harassed me earlier, but females do look at the world differently, and
yeah,
that has
sure.
value. And
Yeah.
You know, and especially programming, it's not, I don't want to say it, you know, you're not jackhammering. Not to say that women cannot jackhammer. I have awesome pictures of Jesse jackhammering. They don't tend to go for those types of jobs, I guess. Whereas this one, I think, is well within their skill set, and that they can exceed and excel and do really well. I don't know. There's no reason for them not to be. Do you see them in, or I should say, I see them at HP in marketing and, you know, leading and doing really well and being very successful. And so it is kind of one of those, huh, why hasn't it made a jump over there yet? And, you know, it's about time.
Yeah, I come back to we talked about probably a couple months ago the Mink is the name of the product, and it's what's her name, it was at Disrupt New York, I can't find it, but this woman, she came up with this product. It's a 3D printer designed to print off makeup, and we talked about it. And I remember one of all the discussion on stage as they were talking about it was just really, really excited about the fact that she was, you know, a female on stage doing this, because it's generally a bunch of dudes up on stage coming up with these new products and stuff. And they were just excited about the presence of a female. And I, at the time, was just like screaming, you're totally missing the fact that she's come up with a product that can disrupt a multi-billion dollar industry. Like, this is huge. This is like one of the biggest, like, in 20 years, there won't be makeup stores. There will be these on our daughter's counters. Like, what the heck? Like, you know, and how, like, nobody commented on, like, that. And the only reason why she came up with it, and the only reason why the reason why it's coming up now is because it's a woman who cares about something that generally men don't care about. And, you know, the simple reality of it is it's like, you know, that's kind of how these things go. You know, it's, makeup is just one example of something where, like you said, it's a different perspective. It's a different market. It's a huge market. It's a huge amount of money, and it's easy to disrupt, and no guys were thinking of it because we don't generally wear makeup, you know. And what other markets are out there that are, you know, traditionally female that can be easy to disrupt with this kind of technology if you put the encouragement and ability into the hands of females, you know? That's why it's important.
I agree.
But, yeah. So, I got a question.
Yeah.
Do you have your text messaging? Do you have your read receipts turned on? So you let everybody know when you've read your text messages?
I do. Yes.
Yeah. You seem confident about this. Do you think that's a good thing?
Do I think it's a good thing?
Yeah. Are you indifferent about it?
It's my preference. I like, how do I want to say it? I like knowing when other people have read my stuff, and I like them knowing when I've read their stuff. It's a like thing. It's like asking me, is the color blue good? I like it. I don't know if it counts as good or bad.
It's so funny because this article that I read, it's called "Turn Off Your Read Receipts Now, a Plea." Okay. And I actually, and the reason why I thought this was really important was because I had actually, like, the day before I read this article, I had actually finally turned off my read receipts on my iPhone, and for a lot of the same reasons that this article kind of gets into. And it basically is, you know, when, because, you know, back in the day of, like, AIM and everything, instant messenger services will very regularly have read receipts involved. You know, like, basically, if you that app became the focus, you know, you've read it and it lets everybody know. And that wasn't a feature on iOS for a long time. It became a feature. And the author was arguing that it basically tortures people, and so this, like, for me, it started
people,
this journey,
huh?
Tortures people. So this journey started. I know. So I think it's more important when you're dating. I have a feeling that the fact that you're married is changing your perspective on this whole thing, or maybe you just have a good communication with your wife is all. But it's funny, like, kids my age, we're all, like, turning them off, because basically what happens is, it's like, for one of our cousins, was chatting with a girl, and some drama had come along, and he didn't want her specifically knowing that, you know, he had read her text messages, because he wanted to be able to process it and wait till the next day to respond. And my dad laughs about the fact that I've notoriously been one to read text messages right away and then not respond for a long time, just so that people who are in conversations with me don't expect me to respond right away. I don't train people to think that this is the fastest way to get a hold of me. I'll read it and I'll respond eventually, but, you know, you might have to give me a couple hours.
Yeah, I actually don't like text messages because they're not searchable. You can't save them anywhere. You can't easily export them. It's not a good medium for communication, in my opinion. And
It is way worse than saying yo, that's for sure.
Well, I mean, that's clearly even worse. Honestly, email's my favorite over tech, because it has everything that I just said. And I can read something and then say, oh, I want to flag it or get back to it later, and then, you know, and then, or mark it unread. So, like, for me, if I can't, you know, especially, like, notifications, right? I can get a, I can see the start of it, and at least, and so I'll know, you know, if they're asking me a question, if I can't respond right away, I'll let it sit there in the notification center, and I will purposely not read it, and, you know, so it doesn't show up as red until I'm ready to respond. And, you know, and it might be because they asked me a question and I've got to check with something or I got to look something up. And I have found that if I read it and don't respond right away, I don't respond. And it's not because I'm mean. I literally just forget because it's not.
Yeah.
My reminder isn't
the
there.
Notification. The flag is on.
Yeah. And I only check the unread stuff, you know, and so because it's not like an email inbox where, okay, I've read it. Let me archive it. You know, it doesn't. So I actually don't like it from that perspective. And so for me, and I don't care.
I don't, you know what I hate about it, and it's, I'm growing angst about text messaging. This is actually becoming a problem for me because one of the things that I've really realized is that I've had relationships where a tremendous amount of the conversation happened over text, and it's like text to me is great at conveying short bouts of facts. I'm here. I'm leaving. I'll meet you at. I'm going to this place. Actually, having long form conversation over text drives me nuts because, like, you're able to convey the facts of a situation and maybe some of the like supplemental emotions, but most of the actual interesting parts of hearing the person's tone, hearing, you know, asking questions, delving into different aspects is impossible because it's such a terrible medium. And for communicating any long-form ideas, and that's what people use it as. And the problem with the read receipt on text is that it's thought of as this instant messaging type portal. Right. I want to continue the conversation now. And when they see that you've read it, they want you to respond. And you know, it's one of those things where it's like, you know, you get this expectation. You're building these expectations of what this communication should be, and so I sit there and I go, it shouldn't be that. I don't want to have this conversation. I don't want to know how your day went over text. That's the last place I want to know, because you're going to say it was really good. I did this, and then when I ask you in real life, say, hey, how was your day today? You say, oh, it was good. We've already talked about it. You've already conveyed all the facts. And we completely miss the actual like excitement of a conversation, and it drives me nuts. And then on the flip side, like you said, as far as an actual like useful form of like conveying of like building up an, you know, of like work related stuff, it's terrible for that too, for the exact same reason, because you can't search it, you can't archive it, you can't use it as a list. I think it's just it drives me nuts. And I think the read receipt kind of perpetuates that whole thing because it leaves this expectation that you need to respond right away. And people get angsty if they think you've read it and you're not responding, if they know that you've read it and they're not responding. And so that's why they're saying, turn it off, just get rid of it. It's terrible. You're torturing people.
I try not to torture people. I've never even really thought of it that way. You've said it, and I'm still like, it's...
Well, you know why? You know what? You want to know why, James? It's because you've never texted a crush, hey, what are you up to tonight? Had it immediately get read, and then just nothing.
It's true.
For hours. Well, I know she's read it, but she hasn't responded. That's the worst, James. It's the worst.
I guess. I don't know. You're right. I haven't experienced that one, so I can't.
All right. Well,
can't really comment on it. Sounds horrible. Fine. Sounds really bad.
It felt terrible.
Though one could also argue that you have been given more information, and that has value. But
all right.
Hey, you know,
I don't want that extra information. I want to be left in the dark. I feel better. I can imagine that. She
I
want to
waste
it
more
fine.
Time and more brain cycles on this person who doesn't care about me.
Oh, no. Oh, come on. I'm going to waste that time anyways.
Yeah, but waste it on something better, like a movie or something.
No. I'm going to waste it on her anyways. It's a sunk cost. I'd rather have the hope there than just the misery of wondering why she doesn't like me. But anyways.
Huh? So a few weeks back, we talked about plane sharing.
Yes, and it was really exciting because it meant that you could cheaply fly down here.
Or not.
Oh, but
you know,
sometimes these things happen.
Yeah, so the FAA has officially come out and effectively killing air pooler and flighty now. Is that how you would say that?
Yeah.
When we were talking about air pooler specifically and how they had gone to the FAA and asked, like, hey, can you guys give an official word on whether or not we can do this, and you know, we won't, you know, it's about splitting costs, not about making money. And you know, they're like, we're trying to play within the rules, but we just want clarification. And the FAA came out and was like, no.
yeah, what the worst part about with their clarification is that it's like, up to this point, as you had stated, that there was sort of this very unofficial, industry of, well, not even an industry, but people would put on like on boards at the airfield, hey, I'm flying here on this day. If you'd like a ride, give me a call. You know, they'd set up carpool, airpool type stuff, you know, casually at airfields. And that was very, very common. And basically this ruling didn't just say that, you know, these different apps won't be able to do that, but it basically put an end to that practice as well, which I'm sure pilots are thrilled about.
Yeah, this kind of will put a crick in the whole, like, flying car industry, too.
Right?
I mean, yeah. Or at least, what's your incentive if you're like, oh, well, I can't give anybody a ride, so...
Yeah. I would hope that they would be smart enough to change this ruling if when flying cars actually take off. Especially now that we have impossible engines that can create hover cars in the near future, thanks NASA. I would hope that that's not something that the FAA would stick with. You know, no promises, I suppose, but yeah. You know, I don't know. That's
just a bummer. I mean, I get it. Yeah. They're trying to keep people safe. You know.
Yeah, but I get why. I get that, you know, air traffic might be different, but I get the sense, and maybe this is just me being, you know, way too cynical, but you know, there's a tremendous amount of money in air travel, and there's big companies that like the status quo, and the guys that work in the FAA are generally, you know, guys that are friends with, if not former employees of the big airlines, and they like to keep the commercial airspace and the novice airspace separate. And I wonder how much that has things to do with it, as opposed to safety. And you know, because why can't two people just do it? Why is that so, you know, horrifying? You know, that's clearly what's going on with Lyft and with Uber, is they're threatening the status quo. It's not a safety concern because they've figured out the insurance, they've figured out how to vet people, and they're, you know, yeah, there are some crazy stories, but in general, you know, it's a very, very safe, effective service. Now safety concerns are out the door, and they're still trying to stop it because you're threatening these entrenched competitors. And it's hard to believe that you would really threaten entrenched competitors with private airplanes doing this, but if all of a sudden it was a cheap alternative to major commercial airlines, especially for, you know, flying from San Jose to Los Angeles
or Portland,
you know, I could see how, you know, if you gave some really rich dude a reason to buy 50 five-seater airplanes because he could fill the seats with these apps, and they'd have their thing going, maybe it could have changed the status quo, and I don't know. That's a bummer.
Yeah, well, I mean, I think about like myself, and I've had that dream of owning an airplane and flying down to, say, visit you guys, and I know that those flights fill up from Portland to San Jose. It's like, dude, I could probably get part of my stuff paid for.
Yeah.
Because there's got to be just enough of them in Salem making that trip up that they'd be like, oh yeah, I'm down. I'll fly with you.
Yeah.
Out of Albany instead. Or something, I don't know.
Yeah.
Oh, well. Bummer. Happens.
Yeah.
Are we on the last one?
I think so.
Which is good, because I have a 5:30 a.m. meeting tomorrow that I'm not really going to be awake for, but I'll be there. It's going to be miserable. So this is not the end of the world.
You.
Plus,
I don't have a 5:30 a.m. meeting. It's just my birthday. So
Your birthday. That's right. This one was actually shared to us by our madre. Figure. So thanks, Mom. Let's see here. There's a Phoenix-based Aleo Motors. Does that sound familiar? I don't know.
Not really.
They want to revolutionize, because that's what you do, the U.S. roads with their tiny Aleo, which is priced at $6,800. That's actually a reasonable number for a new car.
That is a reasonable number.
Yeah. So they're going to start making it next fall, and they already have 27,000 pre-orders.
Which is a lot of pre-orders.
Yeah, I guess. What they want to make, it's essentially a commuter car with three wheels.
Oh, man.
That, and I think I've buried the lead far enough down this little intro, that gets 84 miles to the gallon.
Yeah, see, now that is a selling point right there.
It looks like it's, what, it could fit two people in it, maybe? Comfortably? One person?
Yeah, I mean, comfortably.
It technically would be classified as a motorcycle because it only has three wheels. I liked it, the pictures of it driving on like a snowy road.
Yeah, just to let you know.
Yeah, middle of summer, snowy road.
It's definitely a one-person vehicle.
Yeah, not a ton of storage, and it's gas-powered. It's not electric, which
That's stupid.
84 miles to the gallon, I think, implies that. But I thought I'd just clarify it. Yeah, they're going to sell it at 60 stores, markets. It'll be serviced by Pep Boys Auto Shops. So what's interesting about this is a couple things. Number one, high miles per gallon, which is nice. Number two...
Holy cow! It's got an 8-gallon tank, but at 84 miles per gallon, that's almost 700 miles per tank. Jeez Louise.
That's a decent-sized tank.
Right.
Where was I going with this? So what's interesting about it again, a lot of miles per gallon, a very nice starting price point indeed. Now obviously that's for the stripped down version and you want to add air conditioning and stuff like that. It's suddenly a $12,000 vehicle, but that's the way it works. I like that it's not one of the big auto manufacturers, it's a small little startup making it happen. It's kind of interesting. They're getting away from the car thing and they're headed down the motorcycle track, even though it's clearly a car. But it's just an interesting little piece of tech. I was trying to figure out, like, is there a way that I could justify purchasing something like this the next round of cars that we have? It's tough with only one.
Yeah, a single seater, it's tough.
If I had to drive into the office every day, I do. That might be worth getting, especially if I had a longish commute.
Yeah, yeah. I wondered if you'd be able to split lanes in California.
Probably not.
Well, I mean, there'd be a technical difficulty due to its width. I wonder, but legally, I wonder if, I don't know. I don't know what three-wheel motorcycles might have a different rule. I do know, and my first question in all of this is that one of the biggest problems with trike motorcycles, and the reason why they don't take off as much, isn't just because they're really lame, but they're actually less stable than their two-wheel counterparts. You get the gyroscopic stability from a traditional motorcycle, yeah. So they're pretty stable. But what happens is when you have the three points, as you turn the main wheel, the front wheel, the driving wheel, sometimes it can actually bring it out of stability, and they flip really easily, especially in tight, quick turns. And the difference is that on a two wheel motorcycle you can lean into the turn, whereas on a three wheel you can't, and so they tend to be less stable. And I wonder if they've done anything to try to deal with that, or if they're just
maybe that explains why the wheels are kind of way out there, so it can have a little of that suspension give and go.
I do know that I can't remember what the name of the company was. There is a three wheeled version of a motorcycle where. There's usually you have one wheel that's turned. It's either you have a single wheel in the back that turns or a single wheel in the front that turns. And that's relatively unstable because you can't lean into it. There was a company that they actually built a crazy three-wheel motorcycle where the front two wheels turned and they tilted. So you actually did lean into the turns and stuff, and those were really stable, but they were also very expensive because the whole drivetrain and shock absorber system was rather complex. Yeah, but they were very stable, and they're very, very high performance. I just wonder if they've done anything on this to try to deal with that issue, because it's not the first time a three-wheel car has been made, and the whole instability of a three-wheel car is well documented. Just watch Top Gear. They talk about it every once in a while. Make fun of the problems of it. So, I don't know. Interesting thing about it. But a company worth following, because it's, the super high mileage stuff, I think, is a compelling... It's where the market's leading.
I agree, man.
Cool.
We'll see where that goes.
I like it.
All right, dude. Oh, happy future birthday.
Thank you.
Time.
Last hour and 6 minutes of being a mid to late 20-year-old. Mm-hmm. Very exciting last couple of minutes.
And you're just going to be old from here on out.
Yeah, I am. Yay.
That's okay. I do find myself now talking about, like, what do I want to accomplish when I'm 35 and 40? I'm going,
oh, that's...
I missed my big one for 30, so it's all right. Happens.
You're still at work?
Bummer. At one point in time, I was on track. But...
Yeah, well. Life finds a way. Yeah.
It does. All right, man.
All right, dude.
Good show. I appreciate it.
Yeah. Me too.
Everybody else, thank you for joining us. My name is James Furlow, and my birthday boy brother is Matthew Furlow. And so we will talk next time. Thank you.